Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record show it is 1:05, and today is Friday, March 2nd. Present are Representative Ortiz, Representative Wilson, Vice Chair Guerra, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Grin, Representative Thompson, myself, Co-Chair Seaton, and Representative Kawasaki has previously been excused, but he will be listening from the Fairbanks Legislative Information Office. I see in the room we've been joined by Representative Parrish, and I don't see any other representatives here. So I want to remind everybody about their cell phones first to mute them, please. And today we will be continuing taking public testimony on the two operating budget bills, HB 286 and HB 285. The committee substitutes were adopted Wednesday afternoon and are posted on BASIS, and multiple reports are posted on the Legislative Finance website. Public testimony is limited to 2 minutes per testifier. If you are a member of a group with the same message, in the interest of time, you may select a spokesman to testify for the group. If you are calling from a community without a legislative information office, that is the off-net callers, please call during the off-net times. There are a limited number of off-net lines available, therefore all off-net callers are asked to hang up immediately after their testimony to keep as many lines open as possible, and testifiers can continue to access the meeting online via www.akleg.gov. Click on the Alaska State Legislature and then choose the Listen Now button. The hearing may be televised on gavel to gavel in different communities, so please check your local listing, and please try to sign in 15 minutes early to expedite the sign-in process. And please sign in at your LIO or call 30 minutes prior to the end of the allotted time. If no one is there 30 minutes before the allotted time, we will close early. And so if you live in a community with a legislative information office but are unable to access it during the specified time period, you may send your written testimony to House Finance Committee via House Finance, that's all one word, at akleg.gov through 1 p.m. on Saturday, March 3rd. Today we're scheduled to take up public testimony from 1 to 2:30 from Juneau, from 2:45 to 3:45 from Sitka, Petersburg, Delta Junction, Unalaska, Glen Allen, and Tok, and from 4 to 5 from Bethel, Cordova, Kotzebue, Nome, Valdez, and Wrangell, and from 5 to 6 p.m. from off-net sites. So testifiers in the room, please sign up at the on the sign-up sheets at the other side, and now we will call for our first testifier from, let's see, and did we have, and Representative Guttenberg has joined us, and Representative Tilton has joined us. So let's go ahead and open the public hearing. And the first testifier, I believe, is Jeff Short. Jeff Short, would you come forward, identify yourself and who you represent for the record, and then go ahead with your two-minute testimony.
Does this work okay? Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is Jeff Short, and I'm speaking today on behalf of the Juneau School District Board of Education, of which I am a member. Alaska is still a wealthy state, and we want to thank you for your hard work towards sustainably funding our state government and schools. I'm here today to ask that you increase the base student allocation in the state foundation formula by $100 to partially offset inflation over the last decade. Since 2008, and despite increases in the BSA, inflation has reduced our budget in real terms by about 10%, or nearly $600 per student. These losses have led to a $3 million shortfall in our budget this year. covering it will require larger classrooms and elimination of programs, including those that support our neediest students. Despite what you may hear about test scores, we do an outstanding job of preparing, of educating motivated students from stable and financially secure families for jobs, college, and citizenship. But our mandate includes all students, and those from economically disadvantaged families, or violent homes, or saddest of all, no homes at all, often struggle to learn. Their struggles are by far the main reason our test scores aren't higher. We're getting steadily better at supporting these students, and our graduation rates have improved dramatically. But that progress will likely reverse if we don't at least keep up with inflation. We know you face difficult budgetary decisions. We know that the $25 million it will cost to cover the increase in BSA will make this even harder. But no enterprise can prosper for long without prudent, sustained investments. We can either reinvest in education now, or we can spend much more heavily in the future on social services, prisons, and rebuilding the middle class. Thank you.
And thank you very much for your testimony. There are some questions. Mr. Short? Representative Guerra.
Sorry, Mr. Short, and I don't want to take people's
time. I'm sorry.
You spoke quickly. You said the $600 loss per student has, in real terms, since when?
2008.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's based on the Anchorage CPI.
Thank you. Now we have Linda Watts. And then after Linda, we'll have Jeremy Smile. Or Smile or Simile, one of the two. Welcome. Would you go ahead and introduce yourself and who you represent for the record, and then go ahead with your up to 2 minute testimony.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Linda Watts. Originally, I am from Lake Iliamna in the Bristol Bay region. Now I live in Juneau. I have been to 8 short-term residential treatment centers and most recently long-term residential. I am a person with the disabilities of alcoholism, major depression, and PTSD. I was raised in a dysfunctional alcoholic home with much trauma that included untreated physical and sexual abuse and rape as a child. As a teen, I went to McLaughlin Youth Center for underage drinking, where I received my GED. My marriage at 19 was physically abusive. My mom froze to death under a liquor store awaiting its opening. My brother Tori drowned drunk, and my brother Travis died of spice. I never underwent counseling for any trauma, as I was raised to be strong and cope. I thought of myself as the black sheep of society. I am allergic to alcohol. I break out in handcuffs. In the past 22 years, I have accumulated over 30 convictions due to blackouts with alcohol. All my prior short-term treatment experiences were without aftercare. Now I am doing aftercare. I am now receiving counseling through JAMI and Search Behavioral Health and GHS Aftercare. I work with NAMI, with NCAD's Juneau Reentry Coalition. I'm taking classes at CERC to prepare for college. I go to VTRC Intertribal Drumming, 12-step meetings, Bible study, and church. I work with a division of Voc Rehab, Tribal Voc Rehab, and the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. All these services combined have empowered me to overcome past trauma that led to drinking alcoholically. It is because of these organizations helping me become empowered, I am able to focus on becoming the best recovering person that I can possibly become. I hope that you will support criminal justice reforms, as I believe we are able to be rehabilitated with the right resources. I ask you to support community safety net services. Please support Governor Walker's request for $375,000 state funds to provide reentry and rehabilitation services for returning citizens and constituents after incarceration. And please support Governor Walker's request for $18 million state funds to expand substance abuse treatment centers across the state and funding for the Public Defender Agency, as they are overwhelmed with an unmanageable caseload, which I helped cause in my past but will not do so now. Thank you for your time.
And thank you for the testimony. And next we'll have Jeremy. And after Jeremy, Shasta Myers. Welcome. Would you go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, and go ahead with your two-minute testimony?
Good afternoon, members of the community. Thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Jeremy Simile. I'm 31 years old. I'm a resident of Juneau. I work at Pollard Construction as a laborer. I am an individual with lived experience in incarceration, addiction, as well as long-term recovery. When I was 7 years old, my mother was murdered, and I spent the rest of my life trying to fill the void that was left, and I filled it with drugs and alcohol. And incarceration was a key in my rehabilitation. I've been through two substance abuse treatments. One was for 6 months, one was for 36 months. During those, I never had the ability to reenter into society and use the tools that I learned in the treatment facility to be able to be successful as a member of the community. Since coming to the community of Juneau, I've been able to work with the Reentry Coalition and obtain simple things as clean socks, clean underwear, and I am now moving into residence through the Reentry Coalition. It has been my experience that coming out of incarceration and breaking the criminal ties that I've had my entire life is something that is very difficult to do without support. The Reentry Coalition has allowed me to be able to have that support and the backing of someone who I'm able to bounce thoughts off of, call when I need support. And so I believe that this Reentry Coalition is absolutely imperative to incarcerated individuals becoming successful, productive members of society. So what I am asking is that you guys support Governor Bill Walker's $375,000 to reduce recidivism and prepare individuals for reentry, as well as I'm asking for you guys to support the $18 million for substance abuse treatment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a retired laborer. Hang in there.
Through the chair, thank you.
And seeing no other further questions, thank you. And if there are questions that somebody asks, you are under no obligation to answer the question, but if you want to, you may, if there are questions from the committee. Just to make everybody aware that coming in and giving public testimony, we may ask something, but if you don't want to answer that question, you're free not to answer that question. So now let's go to Shasta Myers, and then next would be Kara Nelson. Welcome.
Thank you.
Identify yourself for the record.
My name is Shasta Myers. I'm 37 years old. I am a Juneau resident. I am currently living in Haven House. I've been clean and sober for 90 days. About 6 years ago, I got heavily into drugs. I got a mixed four drug felony sales charge. I spent some time incarcerated and on probation. I have just graduated from inpatient treatment through Rainforest Recovery Program. I'm doing long-term outpatient treatment through GHS, rehabilitation programs like DVR, TVR, JAMI, CIRC have given me counseling, medication for anxiety, and help with addictions and drug cravings. These services have helped me get into sober housing, and with their help, I have maintained my sobriety, and I have faith in staying that way. Because I am in recovery, I have been able to reunify with my family and my children. Doors have opened for me in so many directions. I am in school to learn a new way of life and will have the ability to support myself in a healthy and sober way. Today, after 5 years, I was told I will be released from probation next week. I have a new hope and purpose for my future. I am here to ask for recidivism reduction services and substance use disorder treatment and community support. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Kara Nelson, and then we'll Greg Fitt.
Hello. Thank you, members of Finance. I don't know why I get nervous still every time. My name is Kara Nelson, and I am from Juneau, and I'm asking in full support of the governor's request for $375 for reducing recidivism, also the governor's request for the $18 million to expand substance use disorder treatment and community supports. I also ask that you support the additional funding for Public Defender Agency. Again, my name is Kara Nelson. I'm a woman in long-term recovery and a woman who has been formerly incarcerated. I spent 20-plus years in active addiction, in and out of prisons, and these supports are incredibly imperative for our Alaska to be healed. None of them go without the other. And so as someone who is also a mother and who has a daughter out there currently using, I want to know that I can call and have these supports readily available. As someone who knows a lot of leadership and who is in this struggle every single day, I can't say that I can make that call today and those supports are going to be there. And so that's what gets me up every single day, and I ask for your support in any way you can. I appreciate what you have done. Thank you.
And thank you, Kara. And Greg Fitch?
Thank you.
Pastor Greg, Joy Lyon?
Good afternoon. I think I said her last year. I do believe I did. And we talked about mental health and the importance of the mental health budget. And I just want to reach out and say some positive things.
Would you say your name and who?
Yes, Gregory Fitch, 49 Juneau, Alaska, resident here of Alaska. And you know what? As I said, we sat here last year and I talked and testified in front of you about the importance of a mental health budget, a robust one. And I just do want to say I want to thank you for what you're doing, very much so. It's very important. You know, I think what it is, you know, a lot of us don't ask what happens in our lives. You know, but we do need help, and that's what's going on. I think we need a hand up, and I think we need to keep getting the hand up, and I appreciate everything you do. I really do. And I think I'm a good living example of good mental health and what a good system can do. We all know what I've got myself into now, most of us do, and I think it's a positive thing. And I couldn't do it without you, and I want to just thank you for that. And I think, you know, a robust budget's very important. I think we must invest in people. I really do. And I think that's so important. And, you know, I thank the governor. I thank you. I thank the state, and I'm glad to be here, and I'm proud to be here. So I just want to be positive and leave on a good note. Increase it, keep it where it's at, but do increase by all means. You know, we all count on it, we do. And we count on you. Thank you.
Thank you. And then we'll go to Joy Lyon and then Stella Elmont. And Joy, would you introduce yourself for the record?
Sure.
And then you represent, and then go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joy Lyon. I'm the director of the Association for the Education of Young Children in Southeast Alaska. And we were here earlier with preschoolers, thanking you all with Valentine's for your support in maintaining stable funding this year for early education. So I'm here with a thank you and knowing that we need to increase our revenue side of the equation so that we can keep moving forward to increase our investment in young children, because we know that 2 out of 3 of young children are coming into kindergarten, according to the Alaska Department of Education developmental profile, that are not prepared for kindergarten and life success. And so 2 out of 3 children, that's really holding back our whole economy and the success of our future citizens. And so we really need to keep that investment moving forward so that we can see some of those cost savings that we're going to see with, well, all of the trauma that we're hearing today. If we had that strong support early on for young children and their families, think what a difference stories that would be coming today. So having that adverse childhood experiences, supporting families, early educators are all about that. So thank you for your support, and let's keep it going forward. Thanks.
Thank you, guys. And then Stella Talman, and then after her, Tom Chart. Welcome, and go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, and go ahead.
Hello, representatives. My name is Stella Tallman, and I'm a sophomore student council member at June Douglas High School. I speak on behalf of my peers when I say that we must increase the base student allocation. I realize that you have very challenging jobs as finance committee members with the cuts our state faces, but you cannot afford to neglect our public schools. Operative costs have gone up around Alaska, forcing our school boards to make cuts to vital programs and resources that we as students depend on for academic success. Our school districts have already cut the FAT, and FAT funding will continue the string of losses we're already suffering, and kids from lower socioeconomic backgrounds will be hit hardest by the cuts to the programs that they depend on. Investing in education will only be beneficial to our state because students like myself require a quality education that will prepare us to become the next generation of leaders that will one day sit right there where you're sitting. Believe me, increasing the BSA is the greatest thing you can do as lawmakers to make way for a stable future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Stella. Tom Jard and then Aaron Walker-Tolles.
Afternoon. My name is Tom Chard. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Behavioral Health Association. I'd like to thank all the members of House Finance and subcommittee members. You guys have done some great work, and I appreciate the budget that we have in front of us. I'd also like to thank this incredible room of people that are sharing their personal stories, their recovery, these intimate experiences that they've had. It's incredible, and I am always overwhelmed by their showing of support. For the past few years, you know that behavioral health grants have been cut or flat funded. This year, they're flat funded in the governor's budget. You've heard the Department of Health and Social Services and the Division of Behavioral Health talk about we are funding Medicaid even with the supplemental request at FY15 levels, yet trying to meet a demand that far exceeds what we were providing in FY15. Grants and Medicaid directly translates in our ability to provide access to mental health services and drug and alcohol services. We understand that we face particular challenges beyond the typical demand, the opioid crisis that's sweeping the nation and our state, helping folks re-enter into the communities and the child abuse and neglect rates in our state. We do appreciate the governor's $18 million supplemental request. We think that that's a responsible request in this fiscal environment in that it's time limited, it expects a community participation, and it helps build the capacity to provide services that we need in our communities that we've heard time and time again. We hope that you support that, and thank you very much for all your work that you've done. Thanks.
Now go to Aaron, and then after her, Aaron Laughlin.
Hi there. Thank you.
Proceed with your 2 minutes.
Thank you very much. My name is Aaron Walker-Tolles, and I'm Executive Director of Catholic Community Service. We are a regional faith-based nonprofit. We serve 4,000 people a year with services throughout Southeast Alaska, including Meals on Wheels, senior centers, paratransit, and here in Juneau, hospice and home care of Juneau, the only hospice and only home health agency. But I'm here today to talk to you about our Child Advocacy Center. We run the Safe Child Advocacy Center doing forensic interviews for children that are referred by law enforcement and Office of Children's Services for suspected sexual abuse, physical abuse, and neglect. We are seeing a dramatic and concerning increase in the number of referrals, 59% increase just this year. It's dramatic, it's pervasive, and from what we've heard from the other CACs, it is statewide. And I'm here to ask you to consider increasing the funding to Child Advocacy Centers statewide. This is funded through the Office of Children's Services using federal TANF money. So this is federal dollars. I know that there is a match requirement, maintenance of effort, for TANF. However, this is a service that's desperately needed. These children need the help we give them, the interviews. It doesn't stop there. It's also help for the family to negotiate the court system. We testify in court, and we're seeing a dramatic increase in prosecutions as well. So I'd ask you to consider increasing that funding for Child Advocacy Centers statewide. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Aaron Laughlin and then Don Habiger after that.
Hello, everyone. My name is Erin Laughlin. I'm a 22-year-old student at the University of Alaska Southeast. I'm studying business administration with an accounting emphasis. I'm the editor of the student newspaper, The Whale Song, at UAS. I'm a freelance writer for multiple media publications in Southeast. I am also a business owner, and I'm also a homeowner. I'm here to advocate for the UA system and ask that the state fully funds the Board of Regents' request for $341 million. I'm a student with many interests, and it is because of the university that I'm able to explore these interests within classes, clubs, and employment at the university. 3 years ago, I moved to Alaska on a whim to work on a whale-watching boat without any intention of staying. However, I fell in love with Alaska, and I also fell in love with the price of secondary education here, so I decided to stay. Because of that movement, or because of that decision to stay, because of the price of education, I've become a homeowner here, and I've decided to live my life here. So I really implore you that you fully fund the university. That way that the budget allows the UA system to have a fully funded staff at the university with a diverse collection of classes and opportunities for students. I'm not here alone today, though. I'm here with 15 other letters from UAS students. I'm also here with my fellow classmate, Bree Walker, who you're going to hear from, and she has also postcards from other students as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I want to recognize that Representative Talrico has joined us in the room. And now we have Don Habiger and then Susan Strauss.
Thank you, co-chairs, members of the House Finance Committee. For the record, I am Don Habiger. I'm community coordinator for the Juneau Reentry Coalition. The mission of the Juneau Reentry Coalition is to promote public safety by identifying and implementing strategies that increase a former prisoner's well-being within the community and reduces the likelihood of their return to prison through recidivating. The Juneau Reentry Coalition supports the funding bill's investment into recidivism reduction services and substance use disorder treatment and community support. I would illustrate the importance of this community boots on the ground recidivism reduction investment with a short story from our community. About a year ago, a local business owner called me to discuss the possibility of hiring an individual recently released from prison and on probation. This was a new experience for this business owner. We discussed reentry case management services, reentry planning, checks and balances in the probation system, and potential reward and risk of the hire. This last fall, I was asking for help from the Juneau community on an assessment project, and a returning citizen volunteered for help. As this individual shared stories of their reentry progress, I realized that this is the individual that was hired by the business owner, and the experience for both was positive. However, last month, I received a call from the same business owner, and we discussed the fact that our mutual friend had fallen off the grid, and we were both concerned about this individual's welfare. Unfortunately, stress triggers had caused a substance use relapse. But because a community system of support had been established, relapse was not prolonged, and this individual is getting back on track, including working through the sanction process of a probation violation. This is an example of smart justice that we are all working so hard to implement in our communities across Alaska. In conclusion, the Juneau Reentry Coalition thanks you for your continued investment in our communities on recidivism reduction and substance use disorder investments.
And thank you for your testimony. Seeing no questions, we'll go to Sean Strauss and then Charles Degnan. Could you introduce yourself for the record and then go ahead with your comment?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you all for your attention. My name is Sean Strauss. I'm a Juneau resident. I've lived here for a total of 16 years. I'm here to state that I respect all of you. I respect all of our state's elected officials. But I'm here to illuminate an important boundary which if crossed is going to have natural consequences. Now, when I say natural consequences, I don't mean if a kid breaks something, then he's grounded. That's an imposed consequence. If a kid doesn't do his homework, he's going to fail his class. That's a natural consequence, and we are facing that. We need a state income tax by the end of this regular session. Without it, we are simply perpetuating greater uncertainty. Uncertainty leads to business pullback, limits to population growth and possible population decline, and social dysfunction. Now, the governor has done what he can. He slashed all of our permanent fund dividends. For that, he's facing significant disapproval. I understand that. But he can't do what you, only you, can do, which is to create a state income tax. And there have been opportunities in the last years to do this. There have been special sessions. It has not happened. This is perpetuating uncertainty. I'll finish by saying, you are all elected officials, so you all know how to use your bully pulpit loudly and effectively. I implore you, use it now. Get this done by the end of this regular session. If you are having difficulties because some people are resisting a state income tax who are also elected officials, then use your bully pulpit. But get this done. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you have any questions?
Thank you for your time and your attention.
Thank you, Sean. And Charles Degnan? Welcome, House Finance. Would you identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your two-minute testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman and Co-Chairman. My name is Charles Degnan. I was born in Unalakleet, Alaska in 1941. I have watched Alaska grow since statehood. And one of the things that I know about our people that live in villages, we help people. We help all those that need help, and everybody takes turns needing help. So, as elected officials, you need to help every citizen of the state, no matter where they live. And you have to look at where they are located. Most of the people originally from Alaska who were born and raised here are subsistence people, no matter where on earth they came from. That is the largest non-discriminatory economy in the world. Now, you are each one responsible to every citizen in the state. You have a cash flow problem, and you have a penalty-giving government. Everything I learned how to do for my parents to survive became illegal after the United States military took over operating the territory of Alaska and made it English only. My, and the English language is so versatile, it's the world trading language. And it's a context language. You can say anything you want, and the interpreter can interpret it differently. So, you need to help people in the smallest communities first, like a family does. Like a family, you take care of the baby to make sure the baby survives. I come as an instructor to the Degnan School of Hard Knocks. I'm one of the younger ones, so I'm both an instructor and a student. And so we needed to do everything that the government required us to do, including following nonsensical bag limits, nonsensical, what do you call that, open season. You look at the size of our state, 5 time zones down to 1 administrative time zone. What kind of state are we living in? It's so big, and then you have the one man, one vote, and you have the largest communities benefiting the most, the largest earning people of corporations benefiting the most because you don't have an income tax. You need to institute it. I think the guy talking before me had a good idea. We used to have an income tax. We even had a school tax. You know, those things are basic necessities to keep the people of Alaska operational. We got how many societies in our country, in our state now, just in our state? You have the majority people that work for corporations. Then you have people that are trying to make it in small communities that are tribal members, village corporation members. If it wasn't for the Native Land Claims Bill that President Nixon signed, we'd be in worse trouble.
And Charles, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up for us so other people can testify.
Thank you for listening to me. And I want you to think about it and execute that plan for having income tax because it's fair enough for everybody. Thank you for your time.
Chuck, I just wanted to, I'll do this once for everybody in the audience, but Chuck, thank you for your service to the state, and to all of you who are speaking today, thank you in your various capacities for your service to the state.
And I forgot to mention the other thing. All the male people in our family are veterans.
So thank you. And then Jenna Degnan? Sorry if I mispronounced your name. Can't tell on the writing here.
That's not a problem. It's June, like Juno.
Oh, June. Well, welcome. Would you identify yourself?
Yes, I'm June Degnan, and I live in Juneau, Alaska. Currently, I'm the president of Haven House Juneau, the transitional home for women coming out of prison. And we self-fund us because we've been sued and it's difficult to raise the money, so I'm the chief fundraiser. So I'm really aware of finances and the fight for finances, and hopefully we all get what we want. But that's not what I came here to talk about. I'm talking about funding sources. They need to be graduated in an income tax that's statewide, which will be the most democratic for all of us. The people I deal with and all the people that I know have called me to say, come and talk about getting a graduated income tax. These are the people who don't have a voice, and these are the people I help, the incarcerated and the disenfranchised. And this is our home. I am Alaska Native by birth. My father was the first Yupik into the territorial legislature in the 50s. My brother Chuck, you just heard, was also in the legislature. And I lived in other places in the world doing these things that have to do with social justice. And I understand economics. We have wonderful resources, but we need to protect them and the environment and our people. We don't need to be borrowing money to pay for our deficit. That is not the right thing to do. We need to put our heads together and figure out how we go into the future and know that it's not going to be with oil, that we have to look at other things. This is our home. We need to look at the Scandinavian nations and what they do. And you're going to continue to have people here wanting money because we're not managing it well. We need to incorporate the people of the land, the tribes, the tribal people, and the native corporations. and everyone else who has a vested interest who truly care about the people. And it's wonderful to be part of Alaska. Although I've lived in many other countries, I'm proud to be an Alaska Native. And my prayers go out to each one of you that you will solve this. And if any way that we can help you to do this, please ask us all, because together we have this home and we need to care and love each other. And thank you for your work.
Thank you, Jim. And now we will go to Ann Fuller and then Tony Delgado. Welcome. Would you identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your 2-minute testimony?
Thank you. My name is Ann Fuller. I live here in Juneau, Alaska. I'm here to say yes, fund schools. Please fund counseling and treatment options for especially for teens. The state of our nation and the world raises many questions to me today, but it seems to me that we know what we need to do. I believe we can tax ourselves. I have been in Alaska long enough to have paid a school tax and paid income tax. And I think that with great ferries, schools, libraries, as well as well-funded justice agencies, we can have a productive society in which people live healthy, sober lives, raising children and helping our neighbors. I think in big pictures. I talk in ideals all the time. You're the ones who get to get down to the nitty-gritty decisions, but I hope you'll keep in mind how important it is to take care of the children.
And thank you very much. Let's go to Tony Delgado and then Antonio Prescott.
Hi, my name is Tony Delgado. I would like to show you guys a photo that I do have on my phone, if I may, because that's a part of what I need to say. This girl, the mother of my child, she was crying for help. She shot herself right in front of here. So, can you imagine that? A person that wants to hurt other people is not a person that, a person that kills himself is a person that needs help and asking for help, and they don't get it. I got in trouble right before that. I did a drive-by shooting. Oh, let me tell you, I'm a U.S. veteran. I used to be in the Army, jump out of airplanes, big old tough guy. But I'm not afraid to cry. Long time ago, I would have been afraid to cry. Right now, I'm not afraid to cry in front of no one. No one. The bill that is happening right now, could have helped her out. Maybe I would have had her. Maybe my daughter right there, in state custody, I'll do whatever possible to try to get him back. If they tell me to go to the moon and go get the monkey back, or the monkey's coming down with me. That's how I feel about my kid. So, you know what? Money's nothing. If I was the richest man in the world, I'd give it all just to have her back. Just to have her back with the daughter, with my daughter. Because I know how it is to have a mother. My mom died like 5 years ago. And that got me to spiral down, using drugs, shooting up, terrorizing that neighborhood. I don't do that no more. I'm in recovery. Back then, I didn't cry. You know, I kept everything in. I grew up in Philadelphia in a tough place. I'm Puerto Rican. I'm from Puerto Rico. I served in the U.S. Army. Jumped out of airplanes. Did it all. I'm 49 years old. If my country calls on me again, I would go right now. I'd drop everything and go. So when it comes down to money's not everything. You know, I was in jail when she shot herself there. And it hit hard. I'm done doing, you know, what I was doing, all the young things, stupidity, drugs, everything. I want to get my daughter. I want to raise her up. I want to teach her Spanish because I didn't teach my older kids. I got other kids that are 30 years old.
Tony, I'm going to have to...
Okay. Well, you know, like on the bill of Governor Walker and both of them, just think about it. I'll give any kind of money, anything I have. Matter of fact, I'll give you my honor. I'll give you my life just to have my daughter back with her mom.
Thank you. And now we'll go to Brianna Walker. And then Emily Perry. Welcome. Would you put yourself on the record?
Yeah, my name is Brianna Walker. I am a student at the University of Alaska Southeast. I'm in the Bachelor of Liberal Arts Independent Design Program, studying social science as well as environmental science. I'm here today as a student, but I'm also here as a student government president at University of Alaska Southeast. And I would like to ask that you fully support and fund the university this year at the Board of Regents budget request for $341 million. The University of Alaska is an essential part to our state, and having a fully funded university guarantees that we're going to continue having a well-educated and skilled workforce here in Alaska. We have a lot of people that are getting ready to retire from statewide positions, and in order to have young people step into those positions that are ready to go and contribute to the economy, it's important that we have the University of Alaska. I myself have had an immense amount of opportunity at the University of Alaska that I did not have. I'm a transfer student, so I came from a different university out of state. I'm now an Alaskan resident. And I can tell you that what we have here in Alaska is very unique. You have unique opportunities for students to study real-world problems, experience research, have job opportunities. You already heard from my fellow student, Aaron Lachlan, who's the editor of the Whale Song. We have students that are doing all kinds of things like that at the University of Alaska Southeast, and giving us our full funding ensures that we are going to have a well-staffed university that will continue to provide students with excellent classes from excellent faculty as well as opportunities outside of the classroom. Aaron already mentioned, but we have postcards from students, and I'd like to hand those off to someone here today. Students took time to write down their personal stories and explain why they are going to school in Alaska and why it's important that you fund the university. I will also be sending you copies so that you each have time. They're very short, and I do ask that you please take time to read them. I know you're very busy. And again, please just consider giving us our funding. We've lost funding over the last couple of years, and if we continue to do so, it's going to affect the students and affect the economy of Alaska in the future. So thank you very much.
Thank you. If you can give the postcards to the secretary. They'll make copies for all of us. And thank you for your testimony. Now, Emily Ferry and then Brenda Taylor.
Good afternoon. My name is Emily Ferry. I live at 836 Calhoun Avenue here in Juneau. It's close enough to the Capitol to scooter, and it's apparently nice enough to do so. I brought along my visual aids. These are my 7-year-old second graders. They go to Montessori Borealis Public School. I am on the site council there. I am also involved with Great Alaska Schools and the many, many, many parents around the state and students as well who want to see a robust education budget. We all know that flat funding isn't keeping education funding the same. It's a cut. Here in Juneau, the school district is looking at a $3 to $5 million cut. I know for us, you know, you think about what the direct impact is. It's a loss of a teacher at our school. And so my kids have been discussing what that means for them. And if you're interested, they can tell you about that. I was encouraged to hear earlier testimony about an income tax. I personally also support that. I think it's embarrassing as an Alaskan that we have the lowest tax rates of any state in the nation, and we have billions of dollars in savings, and we find ourselves in this problem that is completely solvable with the political will. So again, I was encouraged at first to hear testimony supporting an income tax, and then I realized, you know, if the legislature was really doing its job, we would actually hear tons of testimony opposing an income tax, because there'd actually be a bill moving forward that would be putting an income tax on the table. And of course people would be upset, but we also need the leadership from you folks who know what the numbers are, who know how important this is to solve this problem now for the future of our state. And so I really encourage you to do that hard work. There are people out there who will support you, and we need your leadership for our schools and every other service that our state relies on. Thank you very much. And if you have any questions, we can answer them.
And thank you very much. Do the other testifiers wish to put themselves on the record and say something?
Okay. Go ahead. Say your name like you did before. You want to? Apparently not today. They testified in support of HB 339. Is that right, Representative Guerra? So that is another potential solution for at least keeping school funding up with legislation or with inflation. So if it's not here in the operating budget, that could be another potential solution.
And thank you all very much for coming. And I just wanted to make sure that the people that are testifying know that the House did pass an income tax over to the Senate, and that is sitting on the Senate side. So,
thank you, Representative Seaton.
And now we have Brenda Taylor, and after Brenda, Maggie Winston.
Hi, my name is Brenda Taylor, and I am a parent of two General Douglas High School students, one of whom's graduated. I'm the chair of the Juno Douglas Site Council. I'm a part-time math teacher in the district, and for the last year, I've been the co-chair of something called the Juno STEM Coalition, which is a volunteer group of people wanting to get more STEM experiences for Juno kids. And I brought this thing that says, "What is STEM education?" And I'll drop it off at your offices so you can read the fine print. But I wanted to particularly draw attention to why we think STEM education is important, so that we develop adults who can collaborate, innovate, are ready for STEM-specific jobs, the economy, that's key, are scientifically literate, they can make intelligent questions, and the last one I think is most important, which is solve new and complex problems in Juneau and beyond. And I think, I know it's very difficult to assess what's happening in the schools, but what we need is kids who can solve complex problems, such as the one that you have in front of you. And I don't think that your ability to, like scores on a multiple choice test, would be indicative of how well you could solve the complexity of these problems.
What we need in terms of our kids being able to grow up to solve complex problems is practice solving difficult problems themselves that are complex and messy and confusing and hands-on and reality-based. And those things are actually really hard to test on a multiple choice exam. So I understand that difficulty. What the STEM Coalition is doing is trying to get all of that cool, outdoor, real-world, hands-on stuff into our classrooms. We've got a wonderful community in here in all of Alaska because Alaska is about doing things hands-on, right? And they want to be sharing things with our students. Making that happen is a little tricky. One specific thing that happened is because we had a surplus of kids last year, we had a little bit more money coming into Juneau, the school board was able to fund an integration specialist who was going to really be able to help teachers figure out how to integrate. Unfortunately, because the budget wasn't passed in time last year, not until June, by the time the job was posted, the candidates that we had who really would have been wonderful had already committed to their regular teaching jobs. So we had this great opportunity that completely fell through. We're trying our best as volunteers to keep it going, but it's not to keep it going, but to do everything on the outside, but we really need some funded positions to do as well. More specifically, in terms of things that are affecting STEM, I just, in my role on the site council of the high school, we are talking about cutting from two counselors to one counselor. We're talking about cutting the librarian, which seems ridiculous. We're talking about cutting the math, which is something that was identified as being key to being able to progress in terms of attitudes toward math and skill in math. We're talking about cutting CTE positions, and I don't mean like cutting one of those different choices, but multiples of those choices. So it's a complex situation, and I hope that you realize in terms of the long run that we really need to educate our children to be able to deal with the complexity of the world in front of us. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Brenda. Maggie Winston and then Lisa Parody. Did Maggie Winston? Oh, okay. Didn't know who we were looking for.
See if we can get it closer. Might have to hold it up here.
Can I pull on this more?
Come up a little more. There we go. Hi, everybody. My name is Maggie Winston. I'm from Kenai, Alaska, and I'm representing the KEY Coalition. KEY Coalition is an advocacy group started 31 years ago representing people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. I also work at a Center for Independent Living, and I'm the chair for the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. So needless to say, helping individuals get services and to be able to live in their home and community of their choosing is a passion of mine. So with that being said, we are in Juneau this week asking for a stable and sustainable budget in order to an individual that testified before me mentioned that the current fiscal situation is causing perpetuating uncertainty. And it is certainly perpetuating uncertainty for individuals like myself that receive services. We are asking for you to think about people like me in the operating budget and to think about what cuts could mean for individuals like myself and for the other individuals that we help advocate for within the KEY Coalition. So thank you very much for all your hard work.
Well, and thank you very much, Maggie. I don't see any questions this time. Lisa Parody? And after Lisa, Dennis Haas. Welcome. Put yourself on the record and go ahead with your 2 minute testimony.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Lisa Skiles Parody. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators, representing superintendents, elementary and secondary principals, school business officials, and school administrators across Alaska. First, thank you for the opportunity to testify and for your work as public servants. I know it takes a tremendous amount of your personal life, and am greatly appreciative to each of you. Quickly, I've given you before our 2018 joint position statements, and you have them on record. I'll note that our highest priority for school districts is to have timely, reliable, and predictable revenues for schools, funding the true cost of an adequate education for all districts. And we'll just thank you for your work and sponsorship and support of early funding. I hope that we can stay the course on that, and please know that you have the full support of school districts to do so. Also want to support the work of the Finance Subcommittee for the Department of Education and Early Development. Appreciate their focus and support to the department. We certainly support those recommendations, so thank you to Representative Ortiz and his committee. I want to thank you also for all the discussion recently because of our tragedy about school safety. And just note, I've had a number of you talk to me individually and my members about what we need to be doing to ensure safety of all of our students. And I think in addition to making sure our buildings are secure, it's important as you look at the budget to realize that we have to continue to support school districts in the support of students with social emotional needs. And that's counselors, nurses, the folks who in some cases have had to be cut because of the repercussions of flat funding over several years. Those are the people that our kids need in schools to be able to talk to and support them. So I hear that my bell went off. I do want to thank you for the opportunity to testify and close by saying we also support the University of Alaska. Never before in my time have we seen the two systems trying to work together so much to serve our entire continuum. And so thank you for your consideration of their additional money as well. Thanks.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, let's go on to Dennis Haas.
Thank you. My name is Dennis Haas. I'm from the Kenai Peninsula. And I just want to start off by thanking you for all the hard work that you've done. And because of you, my daughter Katie is still alive today. She's received service through a Medicaid waiver, and without that, she would absolutely be dead. There's no doubt in my mind. I know it's expensive, but I was feeling pretty good up until a couple of years ago. I'm an old guy now. I turned 72 in January. And I always thought that if something happened to me, Katie would be okay. But I sit back and I see this system that's eroding. I see agencies having a more difficult time to provide quality care, a more difficult time to recruit and retain qualified help. And I'm worried about what's going to happen to my daughter if something should happen to me. I've lived in Alaska for 47 years. I did not come here to collect a permanent fund. I paid state income tax when I arrived here, and I didn't mind paying it. In North Dakota, I don't think they get a permanent fund. I'm pretty sure they pay a state income tax. Take mine and tax me. I would rather lose it all than see this system continue to erode. Serving people with developmental disabilities saves lives. We have more than 700 people on a list. It's approaching 800 people that qualify for service and that are waiting for services. A couple of years ago, the state agreed to draw 200 people off that list a year. And then last year, they cut it back to 50. That's a 75% cut. A 75% cut. We understand cuts, and we're willing to take our share. But wisely, not just arbitrarily. I am involved with a lot of people with disabilities. I do guardianship to help pay back for the services my daughter gets. And every single person I'm involved with is receiving cuts. Every time that their plan of care comes up for renewal, there's a cut in it. And it doesn't seem like there was much thought put into it. It's just cut, to cut. You know, so I know you have a tough job to do. I know it's doing the right thing isn't always easy, but I'm asking you to do the right thing and to stand up and help us achieve a sustainable budget that will take care of the needs of all of our citizens. Thank you so much for listening to me today.
Thank you, Dennis. No questions. Let's see. We will now go back. We had online Craig Dahl. Craig Dahl, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon. Members of the committee, Co-Chair Seaton. I actually can't see who's there, but my name is Craig Dahl, and I'm the Executive Director for the Greater Juneau Chamber of Commerce, representing over 400 businesses in Alaska's capital city. We respect the challenges that has faced the legislature the past three sessions, and certainly the many tough decisions that you've had to make on the cuts wherever possible, painful as they might have been. Specifically, the University of Alaska has had to deal with severe cuts, eliminating staff, programs, and services to stay within the budgetary limits. And President Johnson and the Board of Regents are certainly to be complimented for making a lot of tough calls. But we're at a point where we need to recognize and respect that a strong university system is the backbone of our state's future business leaders. The business community, not just in Alaska, but across the nation, is going to see an unprecedented shift in the workforce as the boomers, many of us and whom, have delayed their retirement and will exit the workforce in record numbers over a very, very short period of time. And with that, they will take years and decades of experience and their higher levels of education. It is critical that we train and educate our youth to meet these challenges of the future, and there is no better institution poised to take on the challenges than the University of Alaska. The business community needs and expects a well-trained, highly educated workforce to address these changing demographics. On a local level, University of Alaska Southeast is one of our largest employers and is an important asset to the overall quality of life in Juneau. Chancellor Rick Caulfield ensures that the university staff is involved throughout the community whenever and wherever possible, and is a champion of the university system at all levels. Specifically, UAS plays an important role in teacher education, mining and maritime training, fisheries and marine biology research, and a wide range of educational opportunities that keep our economy strong and supports the lifestyle that we of Alaskans are so very, very proud of. So I simply want to urge you to support the university's budget request. It's important for all of us and important for the future of Alaska. Thank you very much for allowing me this time.
And thank you. Questions? Seeing none, we will ask, is there anyone else in the room that hadn't signed up that wants to testify?
I signed up. But she's
not signed up here. Can you tell me your name and go ahead and come forward? Maybe we don't have all the sheets up here.
Does the microphone come forward?
Yes.
Probably. Can you hear me okay?
We sure can.
Great. My name is Michael Hutchings. I am part of the Key Coalition. And as my friend Maggie mentioned earlier, we had come down yesterday to raise awareness. Today I am an example of the gentleman who said that people have a Medicaid waiver program. I have that plan of care. That plan of care gives me housing abilities to be more independent. It gave me the ability to maintain a job at the H2 Oasis for 15 years at the water park. Also, I have a cerebral palsy, so I'm confined to a wheelchair, need assistance getting to and from the toilet and things along those lines, which I would not have that job without the help. Also, we are noticing that there are cuts to funding like they have, so my time to go visit friends and family are more limited. I'd like to be known as Michael, who has lots of activities, gets to go swimming, drinks coffee, and who happens to be in a wheelchair versus Michael, I am in a wheelchair. Thank you for your time.
Michael, I didn't...
Any questions?
Yes, I didn't get your last name, Michael.
Hutchings. H-U-T-C-H-I-N-G-S.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ortiz.
Michael, could you go into a little bit more detail in terms of your awareness to the cuts of DAHAB services and how they've impacted you and others that you know?
I'd love to. Just tell me when you want me to stop. So I have a provider that takes me out into the community. We do everything from going to visit my mom and dad briefly to meeting friends for coffee, going swimming. Whatever I want to do in the world has to be done with that person because I live in a group home, and it's not easy for everybody to get loaded up to go do something because Mike wants to go get it done. And that I have friends that enjoy seeing me, enjoy having coffee together and things along those lines, and without that with the assistance going down to 12 hours, the cut significantly impacts my time to do things. People have to ask me, how long are you able to be around? Because they know that I have particular hours that things can be done, and I am up a creek and have to go home when that time is over. Did I successfully answer your question, sir?
Very successfully. So the net impact, if I may, Mr. Chairman, the net impact is there are more people that are more homebound and not able to get out as much because of these reductions. Is that correct?
That is correct, because it takes extra transportation issues, you know, to lock down the wheelchair in the car. It takes more time, and there are people, you know, who need the assistance. And with the cuts, my opportunity to get out and have a quality of life with my friends is significantly limited. I did write a letter that if you want, one of my friends can help me get to you if you want to provide us some contact for one of you.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you. You did a nice job of explaining.
Do you have a way for us to send you something?
Yeah, we can get that to you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Is there anyone else that was that signed up or wishes to testify at this time?
Okay, yeah, sorry about that. Hi, my name is Talia Keller, and I am a home visitor with the Parents as Teachers program, and I am also the mother of a three-year-old boy here in Juneau. And I'm just here really to say thank you for your support in supporting early childhood education, and hope that you continue to show your support in these super valuable early years of our children's lives.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Is there anyone else that hasn't signed up that wish to testify? Seeing none, and we have no one else online at this time, we will take a break for about 12 minutes and come back at 2:30 for testimony from
2:45.
Okay. 2:45. Oh, yeah. We'll come back at 2:45, and we will take testimony from Sitka, Petersburg, Delta Junction, Unalaska, Glen Ellen, and Tope at that time. So thank you very much for coming in and testifying, giving us the your experience. We'll be at ease. Good afternoon. We're back on the record here in House Finance. And I wanted to go back. There were two people that came in just after we had gone at ease. And if they would come forward, we will take their, just one. Huabo Goldsberry?
Well.
Great. Thank you.
And my name is Heather Mountcastle, and I'm here just to support Fubao and also to represent and testify.
Great, thank you. Welcome, Fubao. Would you go ahead and start with the testimony?
I'm Fubao, and I'm testifying because the money you said on the ballot is Medicaid, and I feel like everybody should not, don't cut Medicaid. And everybody should realize everybody need to be heard. And I feel like we need to speak up and say no cutting Medicaid and the budget. Because the reason why it is because I feel like it is really going to be impactful with our people. If they have a disability, it's going to be really impactful to them.
Do you want to talk about how it's impacted your life?
Yeah. It's impacted my life because I have a disability and I need services to travel, to have doctor's appointments, services, dress up tides and reads. And I asked, don't cut it, please.
And thank you very much, Fubao. I appreciate your testimony. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you for coming in and testifying today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we will go to our next location. We are at Sitka, Petersburg, Delta Junction, Alaska, Glen Ellen, and Tote are available. And do we have any? At this time, we don't have anybody from Sitka, Petersburg, Delta Junction, Unalaska, Glen Ellen, or Tok to testify, so we will take a 10-minute recess. like to call our meeting back to order. We are going to Petersburg, and we have Tom Abbott there. Would you please put yourself on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony?
Yeah, hello, good afternoon. This is Tom Abbott. I'm in Petersburg, and I'm here to speak regarding House Bill 286, the general operating budget. There's a couple of things that concern me that I think are really important in rural Alaska. Public broadcasting funding, the Alaska Marine Highway System, and the education system. You know, the public broadcasting system is a pretty important link for information and for public safety, but also just for a sense of community for a lot of folks, especially in rural areas. And it's been cut a couple of different times, twice in the past 3 years. And I strongly urge that the legislature pass a budget with the governor's numbers in it, which would keep it as a flat funding. We all know and are aware of the budget situation facing the legislature again this year, but there's been two significant cuts to public broadcasting in the past couple of years. So as many different agencies are being cut, public broadcasting has received pretty significant cuts, and especially relative to some of the other areas of the government. The ferry system is extremely important for Alaskans, especially in Southeast, but elsewhere around the state as well. It's an important link for commerce. It's important and link for school students to be able to get to and from different schools for competitions, and whether it's a music fest or a basketball game or whatever it may be, it is a far better system than having to use Alaska Airlines or flying students around by jet as far as cost goes. And as far as the education system, that's our future. Those kids are our future, and we need to really be investing in education of all of our students, K through 12, and also earlier in preschool as well, if the legislature can manage that. So I appreciate all that you do, and really appreciate if you can work as many dollars into those three areas as you can. Appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity to talk.
And thank you, Tom, for your testimony. I don't see any questions, so thanks again. And at this time, we don't have anyone else to testify. So we will we'll take a break until 3:25, and then we'll come back on. So we'll be at ease till 3:25, and see if we have further people to testify from Sitka, Petersburg, Delta Junction, Unalaska, Glen Allen, and Tok. And we're at ease. come back on to order, and we're looking online, and I'm not seeing anyone there. We will wait about three more minutes, as the instructions were. If people didn't sign up or call 30 minutes prior to the end of the allotted time period, the testimony for that time period will close early. So if we don't have anybody signing up by 3:30, we will recess till 4 o'clock, at which time we will take testimony from Bethel, Cordova, Kotzebue, Nome, Valdez, and Rank. So we'll just take a brief at ease and then for 3 minutes and then come back on the record. Okay, we're back on the record. We do not have anyone on the line from Sitka, Petersburg, Delta Junction, Unalaska, Glen Allen, or Tok. So we are at this time going to take recess till 4 o'clock, at which time we will open the line for the LIO for Bethel, Cordova, Kotzebue, Nome, Wrangell, and Valdez. And so we will be at ease till 4 o'clock. The House Finance Committee will come back to order, and this afternoon we are taking testimony from Bethel, Cordova, Kotzebue, Nome, Valdez, and Wrangell, and we have Cordova online first, and we have Kathy Long. Are you there, Kathy? Could you introduce yourself and who you represent, and go ahead with your testimony?
Can you hear?
You're breaking up somewhat, Kathy. Try it again. And
there. Can you hear me?
Yes, now we can. Would you tell us who you
Thank
are
you.
And who you're representing, and go ahead with your two-minute testimony?
Hi, I'm Kathy Long Renfelt, and I am the executive director of the Cordova Chamber of Commerce. I'd like to read some testimony that was written by our president, Jim Cash, back in November, and was sent to the governor and lieutenant governor, and it does represent the position of our members, the businesses of Cordova.
Great, go ahead.
As you're likely well aware, the Alaska Marine Highway System is one of only two ways in and out of Cordova for people, supplies, and commodities. Without a functioning ferry system, the economy, food security, health, and well-being of our citizens are put in serious jeopardy. In Cordova, we are deeply concerned about the short funding of the Alaska Marine Highway System. The ferry transports our livelihoods. It is our first and most important connection to the rest of the world. It's our road. The financial woes of the state of Alaska are immense, and there is no Alaskan that has not been impacted in some way by these troubling times. However, the one thing that is imperative we keep intact is our basic infrastructure. We cannot allow all coastal economies to falter because of something as basic as a road. Please help us fight for our ferry service. It seems that the Alaska Marine Highway has been addressed as almost an afterthought in the current budget process strategy. For example, the draft 2018 summer schedule for the AMHS showed the Aurora in overhaul starting in September, and it also showed the Fairweather going into layup starting in September. This may have been a preemptive measure to provide options for vessel reassignment in the case of lower than expected funding, but it was very concerning that the primary vessels that serve all of Prince William Sound were not scheduled to be operational for months, according to this draft schedule. The possibility of having no ferry service in Cordova is unacceptable. Moving forward, I know there are several options that may come to pass. The South Central Conference has some good options that I think should be considered. And I just want to make it clear that we need the ferry service in Cordova, and that is our number one priority for funding.
And thank you, Kathy. Did you have anything else to add?
No, sir.
Okay, and Representative Ortiz had a question for you if you would like to answer. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay. Kathy, thank you for your testimony today. Can you give us a little bit of background in terms of where service has gone for Cordova from the Alaska Marine Highway System from its most, when you had most access to the Marine Highway System to where it is today?
Sure. There was a point when we had fast ferry service and slow fast ferry service fast ferry service and slow ferry service to Cordova. That's a three-hour ferry service as well on one of the faster vessels, and then also six-hour service on one of the slower vessels. Ideally, the best-case scenario, in my opinion, would be for there to be fast ferry service in the summer, spring and summer, and slower ferry service in the fall and winter if there needs to be cuts made. The Chiniga is in layup, and that is the vessel that was supposed to be home docked in Cordova. We have not seen that happen, although that was guaranteed to us when the ferry service changes came through to bring in the fast ferries. I understand that the fast ferry is a little bit more expensive to run, but the slow ferry, it makes it very difficult to get visitors in and out of Cordova. And when ferry service is irregular, that's also very hard. There was a point in which the ferry was forward funded 3 years, and that was one of the best ways that we were able to make use of the ferry in our community and allowed people and visitors to plan out their trips far enough advance. It gave Cordova businesses that had to do with tourism and ability to staff and fund into the future. When the ferry is not forward funded, then businesses in Cordova that depend on the ferry to bring in their goods and services, when they don't know that that's going to be coming in the future, and when the ferry schedule is not put out until maybe a month before it's running, that's very difficult for our businesses.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kathy. And now let's go to Pete Hoffner.
Yes, this is Pete Hoffner. Can you hear me?
Oh, we sure can. Would you say who you represent and go ahead with your testimony?
Yes, this is Pete Hoffner, and I'm representing the Cordova School District. I appreciate the House Finance Committee for taking testimony on the budget today. I would like to speak for education funding. The base student allocation, BSA, has increased 10% in 10 years. This is not enough to keep up with inflation. In the same time frame, health insurance costs have increased 265%. School budgets are getting smaller and smaller. Additionally, small communities are having fiscal issues as well. In Cordova, for example, the city funding to the schools has decreased from the maximum cap of decades due to a city shortfall. Add to this the increasing unfunded mandates. The latest is the Alaska Child Safety Law. It is a good thing, but there's no funding behind it to pay for the teacher training, as well as having a hard time finding it to fit in the schedule. All of this diverts dollars from the classroom. At some point, education funding needs to be addressed. The inadequate funding levels are affecting the children's education and selection of classes. Early funding, the idea of the early funding bill is an excellent idea. I often joke a number of years back, we used to get 3 years of forward funding so schools could plan out their future. Thank you very much for all of your time and working towards the budget, as well as working on trying to develop a stable fiscal budget.
And thank you very much. I don't see any questions. So now we'll go to Ambler and Morgan Johnson in Ambler.
Thank you. Thank you. This is Morgan Johnson, representing City of Ambler. City of Ambler is with the Upper Cobuk Valley area. I just wanted to thank all the representatives and everybody working on budgeting House Bill 321, the supplemental budget, and the House Bill 286, Community Assistance Program budget. Like any other villages, we're struggling with the program funding that we do receive, that you all pass. Hopefully we can see more in the future, but sorry about my cell phone ringing in the background all of a sudden. But thank you all for the funding these two programs. Not like any other small communities, you know, still struggling as is with what we do receive. Hopefully, it keeps going on in the future. But it looks like FY19 and 2020 looks promising. Hopefully, we can see more of that in the future for the municipalities to survive and keep going and keep servicing the community with what budget we have. Thank you very much.
And thank you very much, Morgan, for calling in from Ambler. I don't see any questions here. Now we'll go to Nome, Hattie Keller. Are you there?
Hi. Thank you for taking my public testimony today. My name is Hattie Keller. I'm here in Nome, and I just wanted to just call in and advocate for the pre-kindergarten funding grants and also the education funding right now. Here in Nome, the city of Nome funds 75% of the school compared to 100%, for example, Bellbees, and right now they're looking at budget cuts and cutting teachers. And something that has been a great passion of mine lately is ensuring that there is educational funds for children ages 0 to 3. And we are looking at, for example, getting more Inupiaq immersion schools, but definitely at least having those educational funds for pre-kindergarten to ensure that our children will have a healthy start for their lives because their brain is still developing from age 0 to 5. And mapping those maps for the rest of their lives. So I definitely just wanted to call and just advocate for that. So thank you for hearing me out.
And thank you very much, Hattie, for calling in. Seeing no questions, we have, Mark. And I don't see that we don't have anyone else online. So, seeing no one else online, we will take a break until 25 after 4:25, and then we'll come back on. So this will be at ease. We're back in order. It is about 4:27, and we have Sue Steinacher from Nome. Are you online, and would you identify yourself, who you represent for the record, and then go ahead with your two-minute testimony?
This is Sue Steinacher, just a Nome resident, but I've also worked for a number of years with the Nome Emergency Shelter Team, or NEST. And I was coming in because I wanted, there's a lot of things here I'd like to see funded, but the one that I most caught my eye was this, that the governor is asking for $18 million of state funds to expand substance abuse treatment across the state. And I noted that he includes housing and other assistance. And I just wanted to tell you a short story that highlights just how important housing is as a follow-up to treatment. And I used to work at the emergency shelter here, and we had a couple that had been together as chronic homeless alcoholics for a number of years and used the shelter in the wintertime. And unfortunately, he beat her up so badly. So, again, alcohol and domestic violence go together. But he beat her up so badly that he went to jail for at least a year, and she went off for surgery and physical rehab. Well, she followed the physical rehab with substance abuse. She went to, you know, at least a three-month residential treatment program, which we know are very expensive. But she came back out of that treatment plan and into homelessness. And in Nome, where we have a severe shortage of housing stock and no funds for this at the time, but she came back out of treatment into homelessness, and a week later was drinking down on Front Street, and just a few months ago finally died from really long-term alcohol poisoning. At the same time, the boyfriend comes out of jail a year later in January with no housing. And he cannot stay at the shelter because she's taken out a restraining order against him. And his probation officer didn't know what to do. Well, she got a hold of me, and we got a hold of behavioral health, and we got a little bit of extra money from the state, and we signed an agreement with him, and we put him into a little deficiency. And then we provided some case management support. And I can tell you that 5 years later, he is still sober, is working, and supporting himself. And so I just want to stress, the in terms of reducing domestic violence, reducing recidivism, and investing in treatment, these things require follow-up with housing and case management. And I just wanted to support the money that the governor wants to put into this and just keep drawing that attention on the importance of these other pieces beyond treatment.
Thank you. We appreciate your insights there. Are there any questions? Seeing no questions, we will go to, did you say? We'll take a brief at ease. We'll come back online, and let's go to Valdez. We have Ruthie Knight. Would you identify yourself for the record, who you represent, and go ahead with your two-minute testimony?
Thank you, and I want to first start off by thanking you for all your efforts to make sure that the funding for Alaskans and all of the services that we have is adequate. At this time, there are two very important issues, I think, for our coastal communities, and that's the funding for the Alaska Marine Highway System. We'd really like to see some rational full funding of the ferry system. not to any particular bill, but this would be one of the bills to speak with to get that to happen. You've probably already heard from other coastal communities, Valdez, we do have road and air and ferry service, but when we had better ferry service, we were able to do a lot more for our economic development. Right now, we're pretty much at bare bones with two ferries a week. And right now, it's one ferry a week. So if you could either look at making sure that it's full funded through this bill, or there might be a full funding fast track bill coming forward too. I'm on the Prince William Sound Economic Development District Board, and we definitely have sent letters to co-chair Seton and Foster, so hopefully you receive those letters also. And then the other issue that I just wanted to speak to was making sure that we figure out a revenue stream. I want you guys to know you're getting beat up a lot, but you have a lot of support from AML, from the Council of Mayors, and from a lot of our citizens here in Valdez to figure out a way to, even if we have to have that nasty word income tax, to get that to happen, to keep our services. So thank you again for your efforts and for all of your hard work. Appreciate that.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And there is a fast track that does have the funding, so that should be on the floor sometime in the next week. So we will be at ease, or do we have anyone else online? We don't have anyone else online. And again, this is open to Bethel, Cordova, Kotzebue, Nome, Valdez, and Wrangell. And so we will be. We'll take a 5-minute ease to see if there's anyone else that comes online. And if there no one comes in online for that time, we will adjourn at that, or we will go at ease till 5. We'll come back to order. It is about 20 till 5. Do we have anyone else online? We don't have anyone else in the audience here to give testimony. So we will take it in ease until 5 o'clock, at which time we will be open for off nuts till 6. So we will be at ease till 5 o'clock. bring the meeting back to order, and it is 5 o'clock, and this is the time for off-net sites from across the state. So we have Frank Osterock from Bering Straits.
Yes.
Frank? Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Oh, we can. Can you introduce yourself and who you represent for the record and go ahead and start your two-minute testimony?
Okay, I can barely hear you, but I hope you can hear me. My name is Frank Osterock, Jr. I'm wearing the hat of the newly elected mayor of Wales. And I'd like to, I know that Donnie Olsen and Neil Foster will agree with what I'm talking about. Up here in the north, you know, around Norton Sound area, that's where I'm, Bering Straits area. And I'm talking from Wells, Alaska. We're the farthest northwest community in the whole state of Alaska. On a good day, clear day, I could see Whistler from my backyard. Anyway, I am concerned that all the services that the northern villages, the bigger villages, you know, that like Anchorage and all those banks and everybody else, the social services that they have, that they do have, because I realize that the population too and the cost of living up here, it's so much higher. We're paying over $400 for a barrel of fuel a month. That's what I use. Also, recently, we lost two young people to suicide. And that's just two more over the past few years. And we, as village of 160 to 150, a small village, we have no resources to try to help the affected families. And we're all mostly related in this village. But what we can do, all we can do is try to talk to them personally, but the counseling that's available to other villages that's in Nome, and resources that we could help the young people that are next to nothing. The only thing I was able to get through NSCDC was little dribbler. That's for the little kids. And, older and teenagers are basically got nothing. No after-school activities. We do have gym, but that's depending on whether there's volunteer to open the gym. And I'm really concerned about our young people because they are our future. And we lost a generation of young people due to mainly from marijuana, illegal marijuana sales. And there's been two marijuana dealers that did it freely, openly, because there's no law enforcement here in Wales. And the troopers, there's bootlegging going on from neighboring village, from Teller to Brevik. They drive it to Teller and then bring it down by four-wheeler to Wales. And that's very scary. I am concerned about our young people. No law enforcement here. I'm grateful to Norton Sound Health Corporation that our clinic is up and running pretty good, but our health aides are getting burnt out. And as the mayor of Wales, I'm really concerned about these things, but our funding is always short. Right now we are getting back on our feet as the city, and we're working on a new washout area. And that's very important to our village because 99% of the households do their laundry at our washateria. And the present washateria is over 40 years old. And we had problems. It's so old, we had problems looking for replacement pumps for it to somehow they got it going. But the new washateria that's in the plans right now is it's very much up in the air because due to high cost of building the washateria, and it all depends on how well the people with wells can pay their. We're on a honey bucket system. We don't have water and sewer here, and it depends on how well the people are able to keep up with their honey bucket bill. Be it though it's only $20 a month, but well, due to lack of jobs here in the villages, all the jobs that are permanent are pretty much well taken. And there's sometimes I wonder how some of these people actually survive. Right. So I'm asking you guys just to think about this. Northern villages up north were struggling, and I ask for you guys' help, and I thank you guys for doing your hard work. Thank you.
And thank you, Frank, and we're sorry for your loss there with those young people. So thank you again for calling in and sharing your testimony with us. Let's go to Tom Lacoche in Anchorage.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Lacoche. I'm a 35-year citizen of Alaska, and I must admit my dereliction of duty in not fully vetting and commenting upon the bills under consideration. But since there's an appropriation for the permanent fund dividend here in HB 286, I'd like to ask the legislature to make it absolutely clear that beyond the initial period of vetoing this legislation, that the governor nor any court may change the statutory language to suit their needs past their veto deadline. To me, the Supreme Court erred in allowing the governor to use a line item veto to change the statutory language for distribution of the permanent fund 18 years after the fact. And I would very much like you to amend the appropriation to return the $1,000 you stole from us or was stolen from us, each of us, 2 years ago. It is abundantly clear that the oil industry will likely sue to get their production tax credits because the statutory language create a liability and indebtedness of the state under that statutory language. And I believe that statutory language from 19 years ago or 20 years ago now is still in effect unless and until you amend it with your new statute. Your new statute is constitutionally appropriate. However, using a line item veto to change the language that mandates and prescribes the distribution of the permanent fund dividend is wholly unconstitutional, and I hope that you will make it clear in this appropriation that this distribution language is binding upon the corporation unless and until it is constitutionally amended by statute again and not by line item veto. Thank you very much for your consideration. I would love to answer any questions regarding clarification of the liability of the state for the the liability of the Permanent Fund Corporation for distribution in accordance with statutory mandates.
Thank you, Tom. Are there any questions? I don't see any questions at this time. Thank you for calling in and testifying. Let's go to Ida Nelson and Iggy. Yes. Ida, are you there?
Hi.
Hello. Hello.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Would you introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, and then go ahead with your testimony?
Good evening, members of the Finance Committee. I am Ida Nelson from Aviagig, which is located at the headwaters of Lake Iliamna in the Vista Bay region. I am here to testify on the state budget in support of the public safety, education, and fisheries. Public safety, we cannot afford to cut any more funding from public safety. We have drugs that are impacting our families and tearing them apart and creating monsters due to their own bad choices. We as family members of those abusers of drugs are left alone to deal with them due to the lack of funding from the state. I am in full support of adding more prosecutors, pretrial officers, and criminal investigators. We also need to increase the state trooper's presence in Alaska because we currently do not have a state trooper or VPSO in our Lake Iliamna region. For education, I am in full support of Representative Les Guerra's House Bill 339 to increase the BSA. We cannot afford to cut our students' future by removing teachers and pink-slipping them before their time. Increasing it only by 1.7% is by far the best way of investing in our future for Alaska and not robbing them from what could have been. As for fisheries, the Alaska Fisheries Program does not need to be cut any further. My fear is that if you decide to cut further funding from the fishery budget, then you have failed to support our students. The Lake and Clinton School Borough taxes a portion of the fish that comes out of Vista Bay and in return help funds the Lake and Clinton School District, which affects my children's education needs. The Lakeland Pencil School District has already shortened our school year by 4 weeks, thus saving $500,000, and our school district cannot afford to cut 2 more weeks of school. It just cannot be done. The funding that has been cut has already dramatically affected our predictions of salmon returns because we no longer have that data, therefore causing a ripple effect through our Bristol Bay salmon fisheries. Thank you for your time. I greatly appreciate this opportunity.
And thank you, Ida, for your testimony. I don't see any questions at this time. Thank you again. And Kim Phillips in Haines. Kim, can you introduce yourself and who you represent for the record, and then go ahead with your up-to-2-minute testimony?
Okay. Thank you. Hello, my name is Kim Phillips. I live in Haines in southeast Alaska. I'm a supervisor for the Rural CAP Parents of Teachers program, and I wanted to quickly thank you for your support of the PAT program in the past. As a supervisor of the PAT program, I travel to our sites and support our parent educators who do the home visiting. Last year, Rural CAP Parents of Teachers went through a process where we showed that we were meeting all the requirements for the Council of Accreditation. People who came to go through this process with us, did random interviewing of the families, the clients that we serve, the staff at our central office, and our parent educators. These people gave us a superb rating for the program that we offer. And I've had the privilege to go out to several communities that I supervise and observe our parent educators who work with the families, bringing encouragement and building on family strengths. This Parents as Teachers program is a strengths-based program where we go to families and genuinely build on strengths. And every family does have strengths. The parent educators bring valuable information to families to help them realize how important it is to be intentional in the things that you do with your young children. Parent educators bring age-appropriate developmental information and activities to enjoy with the family. I have always enjoyed, it's a pleasure for me to go and watch the parent educators as I can see that they have taken the time to build trusting relationships with the families that they serve. Oftentimes the little children, we serve prenatal through three in some communities that don't have Head Start or other early childhood programs. We serve up to 5 years old. The children run to their parent educator because they know as time goes by, that that person that comes to the door is there not only to be together with the family, but children learn that something, there's going to be something that is going to happen, you know, an activity that their parent's going to sit and do with them, and, you know, stories and songs. This program, I feel very strongly that it's a very valuable program supporting families with young children, and we provide group connections where families can get out and meet each other so that they're not in isolation. We connect them to resources. There's many things that this program does, and I would ask that you can find a way to continue to support it. It's very valuable to our families. And it also gets them on board with taking an active role in their child's education. So I want to thank you again and ask for your support also in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kim, for calling in. Are there any questions? Seeing none, we'll go to Jennifer Allen. Jennifer, would you put yourself on the record and who you represent, and then go ahead with your up to 2-minute testimony?
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Jennifer Allen. I'm calling in from Haines, Alaska, and I also represent Rural CAP Parents as Teachers. And I just wanted to thank everybody for the support that they've given Parents as Teachers, but also assure you that Parents as Teachers is an excellent investment in young children. The more information that we have on adverse childhood experiences and how they follow us through life, creating, you know, certain health problems, etc., every time we look at those statistics, we need to realize that investing in young children and young families is a good, good choice. We'll save money in the long run, and we'll build stronger communities around our state. Thank you very much.
Thank you. No questions. Thank you, Jennifer, for calling in. Do we have anyone else online? We have no one else online now, so we will take it at ease till 5:30, and if no one has called in by 5:30, we will then, as we've noticed throughout the time, we will adjourn the meeting at that time. So we'll take it at ease for about 12 minutes. bring House Finance back to order. And we have Evelyn Trifon in New Haven. And it says New Haven. I don't know if that's New Haven, but anyway, if you would introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, Evelyn, and go ahead with your up to 2 minute testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Seaton and Finance Committee, for having public testimony today. My name is Evelyn Trifon, and I live in New Haven, Alaska, which is off of Lake Iliamna in the Bristol Bay region. I am calling today to support proper funding of education. Continue to flat fund our schools cannot be a continued solution. My daughter currently attends preschool here in New Haven. This fall, she'll begin kindergarten, and I'm very nervous for her to make this transition because I want her to have all the opportunities that she can possibly have. If our schools are not funded to the levels that they should be, then I fear that her educational opportunities will be greatly diminished and limited. For our school district, and two of the main sources for funding actually come from the state through the BSA program and from the Lake and Peninsula Borough through the fisheries tax. Last summer, many fishermen across Bristol Bay felt and saw firsthand that fisheries management was not adequately handled. Fish were coming up the Quijack River from Bristol Bay, and the fishing game were not even set up with their counting towers due to funding. And unknown amounts of fish escaped and were not counted. Had the counting towers been in place prior to the run, the fish would have been counted and the commercial fishing season could have started sooner. That was literally potentially thousands of dollars literally swimming away. Please fund fishing game so that they can do their job properly. I would also like to encourage you to fund troopers and public safety properly. Where I live, the closest trooper or VPSO is over 200 miles away. Last spring, my neighbor's house was violently broken into. Luckily, no one was home at the time, and it took a trooper over 2 weeks to come and investigate the incident. The person that allegedly broke into that house was in our village the entire time. Due to budget cuts, troopers cannot fly in emergency unless it's an emergency situation. I often feel like unless somebody is killed, a trooper cannot come to our village. The state needs to support the trooper program with funding, and if it is going to continue to work for Alaska. Finally, I would like to encourage you to continue to protect PCE. It's vital to our communities here in rural Alaska, and I would also like to encourage you to fund community assistance from municipalities. That is also especially critical for our small municipalities. And I would also like to encourage you to not have special sessions and to get the job done in a timely fashion. We are relying on you guys to do your job, and I really would encourage you to do it within the 90 or 120 days. Once again, thank you for this opportunity to testify today, and I wish you guys luck.
Thank you much, Evelyn. Is there any questions? Seeing none, thank you again for calling in and offering your testimony today. We appreciate all the peoples that from across the state that participated today. Do we have anyone else online? I don't believe so. So anyway, we will end public testimony then for today. Like I say, I wanted to thank the testifiers for their participation. As I mentioned, the start of today's hearing, written testimony can be submitted to House Finance, that's one word, House Finance, at akleg.gov through 1 p.m. Saturday, March 3rd. And my time's up. And I'd like to remind members that amendments for House Bill 285 and 286 are due to legislative finance via the amendment system by 5 p.m. Saturday, March 3rd. And members are encouraged to submit amendments before the deadline so that they have time to start working on them tomorrow. Our next meeting is Saturday, March 3rd at 9 a.m. We will be taking public testimony from 9 to 10 a.m. From off-sites, from 10:15 to 11:45 from Anchorage, and from 12 o'clock to 1 p.m. for the off-night net sites. Is there anything else to come before the committee at this time? Seeing none, we are adjourned at 5:35.